File 3099. We're working off the A4 delete everything amendment. Senator Berglund, did you want to make some opening comments or whatever?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm sure that there are some parts of this bill that some of you like a lot better than other parts. And that's even probably true for me. But what I can tell you is that when you are working with a group of people like we did with the Healthcare Transformation Task Force, and then you bring recommendations to the governor's office and you get him to agree to do certain things in regard to the recommendations, that's what's always going to happen. You're going to have some parts that are more important to one group of people, another that's more important to another group of people, and another that is important to another group of people. I think the important thing to remember about these recommendations, whether there are some that you like better than others, is that they support each other in the goals that they have. We cannot get access for everyone to have affordable health care coverage unless we control health care costs, because one of the reasons we're getting more and more uninsured people is because the costs keep going up. And so then we're just chasing the number of uninsured people if we're just having a piece that provides more affordable coverage. We can't expect our health care system through payment reform alone to control costs unless we focus on having a healthier society. And so the public health portions of the bill are very important also, and will have far-ranging and longer impact on reducing health care costs than some of the other parts of the bill. And then in order to ensure the uninsured and make sure we have affordable health care for everyone, the insured and the uninsured, we have to have revenue to do that. And this bill will help to provide a source of revenue to do that. And so the bill, I think, holds together. And each piece supports the other pieces, and I believe the payment reform parts of the bill will encourage providers to do things differently, but it also has incentives in here for patients and consumers to be moving in the same direction that the payment reform is moving the providers. So I think every part of the bill helps to support another part of the bill, and so we will have a much stronger bill if we move all the parts forward. So we do have a couple of amendments. I don't know if we have enough people here to do amendments yet.
You do have a quorum, yeah.
Okay. The first amendment is an A9 amendment, and it is an amendment that Senate Counsel has worked on in regard to the issues that were raised at our last meeting in regard to language regarding the public health improvement assessment. And so it includes health plan companies in the assessment. And Ms. Kavanaugh, does it also limit the time for this assessment?
Mr. Chair and Senator Berglund, yes, on page 2, line 30, this section would expire in 5 years.
Right. And I did describe it that way to you all, but somebody did point out to me that it wasn't clear in the bill. So it's clear in the bill now. That doesn't mean that the public health improvement program couldn't continue. We hope it'll be successful and that we'll all want to continue it, but we would not be using this source of financing. After the 5 years, then we would expect we would have money in the health savings assessment fund that we could use to pay for this. So,
thank you. Senator Berglund moves the A9 amendment. Are there any questions about that amendment? So it now has the health plans included in it. Senator Berglund, when you said that and July 2nd, 2013, there won't be the funding for it, but the programs could continue. Are you envisioning that we would either extend this funding or you were envisioning it continuing the program if
right
not
I was envisioning at that point being able to fund it out of the healthcare savings fund.
Okay. Is there any further discussion on the A9 amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Then, Mr. Chairman, the Department of Health has done some more work on the statewide health improvement program. I had indicated to Senator Higgins at our last meeting that I knew they were doing that, and that would be the A11 amendment. And so they have really created three phases for communities to go through in their process. One is an initiation phase that they would receive funding to do a needs assessment and to identify the partners that they would have in their team to continue the process. The second would be a planning phase where they would actually complete an action plan for their community. And then the third would be an implementation phase. And so the language makes it clear that you have to finish each phase before you move on to the next phase. And then there is a little bit tighter criteria here on measuring outcomes as a result of the funding and allowing the commissioner to provide a corrective plan to a community that isn't getting any outcomes or getting very few outcomes for their investment. And it does also allow them to reduce funding if a community isn't able to get their plan working well enough to show results. And it has a report back to the legislature every 2 years on the progress that communities are making with it. And it does have a section about that these funds can't supplant other funds that they might be spending in the area of public health. So I think this is much tighter. I'm hoping that Senator Torres-Ray has had a chance to see this amendment. I only got it when I arrived at the committee today myself. So if you have any comments about it or anything you'd like to say, or if you've looked it over, if it looks okay to you.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Berglund, I was looking into this language, and I need a little bit of time, but overall this is, I think, a very good amendment. In Subdivision 2, I think that you have under the activities that be based on scientific evidence and be based on community input. I would like to add that are culturally relevant as well, but I need to think a little bit about this, mainly because some of the alcohol treatment programs that we have now are kind of have some innovative treatment strategies that are really culturally based, and also issues around language that are very important here. But I need a few minutes to really think about that.
Okay. Well, we could just set this aside for her to have a little more time to look at, Mr. Chairman, and we could move on then to any questions that anybody has.
We will set that aside then until we're ready to move on. Well, I did have one question about it before we, Senator Berger?
Yes?
I did have one question about it when we talked about the $40 million. I know the department and the working group had set the 57 or whatever million, and that was based on X dollars per capita plus flat amount per community. When you talk about the grants and competitive process for it, is that based on the fact that if we spend 40, we can do in effect two-thirds of every community or lesser amounts per community?
I think it is envisioning a little bit lesser amount per community.
Okay.
I mean, there was a range of $23 million to $57 million, and this is what we could get an agreement
I understand
on.
That. And then I presume most of the funding, they could get the funding at the beginning, they just have to have three phases. And the initiation part would be relatively small. Planning might be a little large, and implementation would be the bulk of the funding?
That's correct. And different communities in the state will be at different phases. So that's why, you know, you might have a community that's actually at the implementation stage and another community that's at the initiation stage, depending on, you know, if they're a community that has applied for the or to be one of the federal communities in the past, or whether they are one, or how much work they've been able to do before this on this issue.
Senator Erickson Robes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is not a question related to Senator Berglund's explanation. It's just I have another question to follow.
Go ahead. We're laying this over until Senator Torres Ray was ready with any comments.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question had to do with generally when we hear testimony at the end of our list of testifiers, you usually ask if there's anyone else in the room that wants to testify. I think because we're running so late at our last meeting, I didn't hear you extend an opportunity to anyone in the room. I wonder if we could do that today.
I'd be happy to. I'd like it to be kept fairly brief for people who did not have a chance, who had concerns. Be happy to have people, whether it's, I think it would be most helpful today if we had specific comments or concerns about sections of the bill. But if people do want to, if they could let staff know, we'd be happy to add them, or if you have others that you want to. So just let staff know, and we'll be happy to. Senator Lynch.
Mr. Chair, along the lines of the issue that Senator Torres Ray is trying to resolve, and Senator Berglund, maybe for your consideration, I wonder if it would be helpful to take a look at lines 2.29, 2.28. The commissioner shall develop the statewide campaigns and determine the timing of these campaigns in consultation with local public health representatives. And the reason I point that section out is because one of the things that I like about this overall concept and provision in the bill.
Are you working off the amendment, Mr. Chairman and Senator
Lynch?
She's on
page
four. Bill itself.
Off the bill itself.
Okay.
Sorry. Mr. Chair, off the bill itself, line 2.28. One of the provisions that I like in this bill and the concept of the whole public health thing is that very clearly we are establishing that these programs will be developed and put together locally. And so I wonder, Senator Torres Ray, if we're working with our local public health representatives, I'd like to think that our local public health representatives are fully cognizant of the demographics and the cultural makeup of our communities and that type of thing. And so I just offer that as a suggestion that I feel like your concern is or could be addressed right in there.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm just looking at the delete everything amendment, and that language I don't see in the amendment. So maybe we could ask someone from the Department of Health to come up here and help us understand whether there, if the amendment's adopted, if there still is a media campaign or not.
Welcome to the committee. Just go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. We did delete the language that talked about a statewide campaign just in an effort, if we're going to be focusing funds to $40 million and looking at focusing on obesity, tobacco, and alcohol, it's just a financial issue. We felt that the funds could be better used within the communities to move forward systems, environmental, and policy changes better than they could be used in a statewide campaign.
Just to speak to the issue, the department in drafting this amendment has included that in putting together a plan that the community has to look at their health disparities. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't add some more things in regard to the grantee activity, but we are trying to address that concern.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Senator Berglund and Senator Lynch, my concern is not just with regard to community input and participation, but actually with the actual activities related to treatment and other specific programs that exist today that we know are evidence-based, that are very innovative. So it's more related to practice of actual healthcare-related activities. It's not really about involving people for the sake of involving, but really utilizing practices. That's why I'm just considering that that, and after I read it, I would like to say be based on science, evidence, and culturally relevant, because that, for me, is the practice. It's not just community input, but it's the actual practice. So I think this amendment is okay. I just want the different organizations to really review current practices that are being utilized today in healthcare that are very innovative and very promising. So that's it. That's the only thing. So the community input, it's okay. However it happens, it's not the same thing.
I agree with you.
Senator Berglund, you moved the A11 amendment then. Is there a further discussion on that? Not all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Berglund, I heard Thursday, I guess it was, from a woman from the state's council serving deaf and hard of hearing people that they were concerned in the funding for the healthcare homes, the care coordination fee on page 7, that while there's a reference at the top of page 6 to care being provided in a culturally and linguistically appropriate manner, they mentioned that the Transformation Task Force had specified that the care coordination fee should recognize that translators or interpreters or whatever could cost more. And I also noticed you do have that later in the bill where you, the second section where you talk about care coordination fees in Article 4. But in Article 2, there is no mention of that. So I had an amendment drafted that maybe Senator Torres-Ray could or somebody introduce. But it would simply put after, while it's being distributed, it would simply put on page 7, line 9, language like we have on page 40-something or 50-something, that the care coordination fee would be determined by the commissioner and must vary by thresholds of care complexity, including the additional time and resources needed for patients with limited English language skills, cultural differences, or barriers to health care, which I think is what you have in the second section.
Right. And Senator Marty, the reason it's in the second section and not in the first section is because the first section is dealing with public programs. And in our public programs, we already pay for translation services at every level of care. The place that we're having problems getting payment for it is in our private sector, where people have private health insurance. And so that was the issue that I think we were trying to address in the latter section, because the latter section is dealing with healthcare homes that would be provided through private insurance mechanisms.
Senator Berglund, the concern from the woman from the council, however, I think was perhaps more than the fact that you would pay for the interpreter, because I think that's what you're pointing out. But if a care coordinator is dealing with somebody, with some communication barriers and so on, it's going to take a lot more time of theirs as well as getting somebody there. I'm just telling you that they were very concerned about it. They felt that this would more adequately reflect what they had in the language that she showed me in the, from the Transformation Task Force report. It was Appendix A of that report.
Uh-huh. Well, is there anyone here from the Department of Human Services that could talk about how they plan to implement this fee? Well, then I guess my suggestion would be that we go ahead and adopt the amendment, and then if there's a problem, we'll work it out later. Does that sound okay?
Sure, that would be great. The amendment should, the page and line thing should be read page 7, line 9, after complexity. So if
I'll move that, Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins moves the amendment with that incorporated in it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Further, Senator Berglund, you have any further amendments or?
No.
To discussion of the bill. I have some questions, but I wonder if anybody else does. No. Senator Berglund, I was trying to figure out again when we were talking on Wednesday night in Section 21, the Tier 3 language that you were talking about, where you have this submitting
page, are you on?
Page 54. Just trying to understand, again, how these total care bids work. If a care coordinator, primary care provider, is going to submit a total care bid, does that mean, in effect, we're going to pay them a capitated fee per person, and they are going to take care of the whole? In other words, if my doctor and that doctor's clinic was to offer a total bid, you'd say that they'd be working, taking bids from the hospitals, the surgeons, the physical therapy clinics, the everything else, and they would submit a total care bid based on that, I presume, to the health plan?
They would be providing it to the state. They would also, the health plans also would have it.
It would be public information,
it
obviously.
It would be, because it would be part of how we make prices transparent.
Now,
and to answer your question, how would they get paid, they would have a choice of how they get paid. They might want to be paid on a fee-for-service basis, or they might want to be paid on baskets of care basis, or they might want to be paid on a total capitation basis, and they would be able to choose.
But outside of the total capitation basis, so in other words, my local clinic could, if they chose to do so, they could be a mini health plan where they would pick who's in their network, and if I signed up for them, I would be using their hospital, their clinics, their labs. I'd be just buying their package. Instead of buying a package from a health plan, I'd be, in effect, through my health plan or whatever, I'd be, or an individual getting coverage too, could buy it directly from that provider.
You wouldn't be buying your policy from a provider. You'd be buying your policy from an insurance company. But the total cost of care would be something that would apply to every insurance company that would be paying that provider, and you would be in some cases having choices of a number of hospitals that you might be able to go to. In other cases, if they have a particular contract for a basket of care and that basket has a hospitalization component, then you might be going to the hospital that they have worked out an agreement with in regard to that basket of care.
But would one provider, one doctor, one clinic, whatever, I presume it's larger, they'd pool together and have larger clinics doing this, but if they were to put together a total cost of care comprehensive care package, and I was going to that doctor and decided I wanted somebody else to go to for a hospital, different hospital for surgery or something.
You would be able to do that.
I could, but
you might have a higher copayment.
Okay. Do we have limits on the copayments?
No. These are details that would be worked out in the implementation, and that's why we have the Healthcare Transformation Commission. And we have very carefully made sure that the membership on that commission is equal between the governor, the House, and the Senate.
Now, but with that, so in effect, if my doctor has submitted a total bid, can I use him fee for service? In other words, I go to him for the things I want there, but I use different labs, different clinics, different physical therapists, different surgeons?
Yes, you would be able to do that. Maybe the lab or the other service that your provider has in their network is not in a low-tier, low-cost, high-quality tier. If you went to a low-cost, high-quality tier provider, you'd be better off. You'd be able to do that, yes.
And so the health plan, what they would be doing is determining how much copayment I would have extra for going to a different hospital or a different physical therapy clinic or different surgeon or whatever.
Right. But you see, the plan, if a total cost of care plan comes in, it might not be the lowest price services that you could get. And if you want to choose a lower price provider, you would be able to do that. You're not limited to that network because you go to that doctor.
Would I have a lower copayment if I'm picking a cheaper one? If I had picked the basket care, I mean the comprehensive care from that doctor, would I be able to pick a lower cost clinic and get a lower copayment?
Yes.
I think
that's
not good. If what I'm trying to figure out, and I'm not sure if I'm asking the question right, but If I or anybody or even a health plan wants to buy for somebody who has, say, back problem, neck problem, if I want to buy it from my doctor and my physical therapy clinic and whichever in choice of hospital and doctor and the labs and everything else, if I go through those places, I'm not going to get it a penny cheaper than if I go through this care package that the provider has picked out for me, correct?
No, you might.
But if they're the same people, would it be, it's the same price?
No, it's the same price. I thought you meant if you selected somebody else other than this package of care, this basket of care, if the basket of care isn't the lowest, it just because it's a basket doesn't mean it would necessarily be the lowest price. You might be able to pick out a la carte services that would be higher quality, lower price services.
I understand that, but what's the benefit of the comprehensive package? I mean, if my surgeon deals with my doctor and he's in that basket that they put together, and I can go directly to the doctor, get the same rate and the same services, where's the savings from having to the doctor or the health plan or me as an individual to have them bundle it into a whatever we're calling a total care package?
Well, the advantage to the provider is that they would be getting paid more flexibly. So rather than getting paid on a fee-for-service basis, they would be getting paid on, you know, the number of people they have that they're providing these baskets to. So they get paid more flexibly, so they presumably can do more innovative things within their practice.
Could they make more money doing it in effect that way?
If they are more efficient, they might.
Is the surgeon, the hospital, and the X-ray lab or MRI lab or whatever, are they all, I mean, if I'm getting an MRI and a surgery and everything else, which is pretty complex things to price, but if I'm getting all of those things, I'm not going to get a cheaper price than I could get if I bought it through the plan. I'm going to have the same fixed price either way.
If you're buying it from the same providers, it would be the same price. Yes.
Okay. and the health plan wouldn't see any difference, but because this provider was getting the basket of care, in effect, if they could do it, oh, we didn't need the MRI to do the surgery, we could still get the pay as if we had done the MRI for the surgery, and we didn't feel we needed it, and we got this basket of care.
In your case, they might not have needed to do that. In another person's case, they might need to do that service. So,
unless it's total capitation for that package, how do they pay them differently?
Well, that's what it would be. It would be a price per member per month for people who are receiving that package of services.
So, in effect, the doctor in the clinic, the care coordinator, whoever's putting in this bid, they are, in effect, they could be totally what we have is a health plan now, other than that the health plan would be deciding what the co-payments would be?
Right. And there would be some standardization of co-pays based on what tier a provider comes in regard to their price
and quality. And you got three or four tiers.
Right.
But if I went to the same people, got the same services, went to the same surgeon, the same hospital, the same MRI lab, the same physical therapy lab, everybody, I would be paying the same. I'm going to have a co-payment for the visit. I'm going to have a co-pay for the therapy sessions, co-pay for everything. So it's not going to cost me a penny more or a penny less if I bought it bundled or individually. But for the health plan's sake, it's not going to change them either. Simply, they're going to
right.
pay the doctor.
There might be some services in the basket that you can't buy on a fee-for-service basis because they don't get paid for on a fee-for-service basis, like if they have to send a nurse practitioner out to your house and help you with your medications or, you know, provide you with nutrition counseling at home because it's difficult for you to come into the office, or they might do more counseling over the phone with you. That might not be available in a fee-for-service system.
But in other words, if I was getting the surgery and I needed a nurse to come out to my house to give me some injection afterwards, you're saying that if I bought it through the package, I'd get that, but if I bought it individually, I wouldn't get covered for that, or?
Well, you might have to come into the office to get the injection, and it might be, in that case, it might be a different price.
So I might pay more if I don't buy it bundled.
You might.
And in terms of how, like with the dental care and so on, they would just be putting bids in on their own. They would not be coordinating. Like would a dentist put in a bid for orthodontia care and so on too? Or
they would be disclosing a price. They would not be bidding. They would be just disclosing their price. The bids are on total cost of care, or on a basket of care, or on a subset of services. But we don't envision dentists providing bids, so to speak. We envision them providing prices that would be transparent to the public.
Would this total care combination bid from my doctor, if they chose to do that, would that include the dental and orthodontia then? Would they be, I mean, where's the dental get packaged in?
Well, I believe the dental costs would be separate from the medical costs.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Scott Lights from the Health Department. Mr. Chair, what the bidding envisions is that there would be a comprehensive set of services that would be defined, could include dental, and in that case, the total cost of care bidder would include a dentist as part of that, or some number of dentists as part of their bid. They would include that dentist as part, the cost of that dentist as part of that bid. The dentists themselves would unlikely to bid total cost of care, similar to what chiropractic may be also included in that area of people who would be included in a total cost of care bid, but wouldn't necessarily be the direct provider of those services. So they would essentially be part of that provider's bid, but not necessarily the bidder themselves.
And so if when you mentioned that some plans, I'm guessing some bids, package bids, would include dental care and orthodontia and so on, and some would not?
Mr. Chair, that would be correct. I think the way that the marketplace for health insurance policies would still cover or not cover certain benefits, and that would be, again, part of the design function that health plans would be playing. They would still be accepting the risk of populations and still be developing products that included services or didn't include services and had co-pays or didn't have co-pays or cost-sharing or didn't have cost-sharing. That would still all be in plan design as it is today. The total cost of care bid that would be provided then would be for the average cost of services for a given population for a given SLU or comprehensive set of services.
So is on a state health plan, if we wanted, if we got dental care, in effect, it would be the health plan would, with a state health plan in that case, would be including dental care in it, and they could either have, and so if my local clinic doctor wants to put in a total package bid, they could bring in dentists and orthodontists and everybody else and say, we're going to put this package in, and if they decide they were going to do it for everything but dentists and orthodontia and hospitals, say they could have a package. It's everything but those things. And so I, as the employee going to the plan, I'm choosing that plan as opposed to some other plan if I have a choice of two plans based on how much they're going to charge me for co-pays. And assuming that, like at the state, we were covered for dental as well as for medical, and hospital would be covered and everything, there's going to be no difference in price that health partners would pay from, say, Medica for the same package of things. So all I'm doing is picking them based on effectively co-payments.
Well, there would be a difference based on which providers you might choose.
In other words, some. But if my doctor makes a bid and says we're going to have this package of care for $4,000 a person,
the price would be the same for everybody.
And so if Health Partners was the one that took that bid, Medica could pay the same $4,000 for the same bid. So in effect, there would be no difference between the health plans.
That's right.
Other than the co-payments.
That's right.
So my difference between Allina and Health Partners, if I have two choices at work, is which one gives me lower co-payments?
Well, if you're selecting the same set of providers.
Right, right.
Yes.
But if I like my local doctor, my local clinic, the hospital they use, that whole package of things, I'm basically shopping for health plan based on who gives me better co-pays.
Right. But you might want to be looking to see, even though you like this clinic really a lot, if they're a really high price, low quality clinic, you might want to be checking out a few of the other ones just to see if,
right,
you know, you might decide you want to change.
I understand that, and I think that's a good point. I'm just asking what the health plan role is in it, because it seems to me that whether I go to Health Partners or UCare or whoever else, I'm going to be paying, the only difference would be what I pay in co-payments.
Right. They might be developing products that have, you know, only providers that are in Tier 1 or Tier 2 as your option, and then have have a lower premium for that policy as a result.
But if so, it's not going to be just they could determine the premiums, but the same, any health plan has access to any package from any provider at the same rate.
That's right.
So the only thing they're doing is deciding which ones they're going to cover, because they can choose which ones they want to include or exclude, and they're deciding who they cover and then what your premium and what your copay is, but it's identical.
That's right.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
You know, I'd like to make the motion, I know, that to move the bill on to the appropriate committee.
Well, Senator Fischbach, I actually had about two amendments I was interested in yet myself, but I'll ask if anybody else does. If not, I'll give the gavel over to somebody else, and because I had two amendments I wanted. And we did have one person who wished to testify as well.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, Congressman Oberstar's downstairs, and there was a lot going on this afternoon, and
you know, I know we didn't get started on time, but, you know, I thought that we would finish up here fairly quickly so that we could get on to our afternoon meetings. And I believe, Mr. Chair, you've got a committee this afternoon, too, so.
Got plenty of things this afternoon as well. I only have two amendments, and I would like to deal with them. But if nobody else has any other ones, I will relinquish the gavel now because I did want to. I would like to offer two amendments.
Senator Marty.
I'd like to offer the A-12 amendment. And while it's being distributed, I will just explain. This would amend on page 49. The standard benefit and design setting. When it talks about the necessary evidence-based healthcare services, procedures, and diagnostic tests, would insert, do you have the word including there?
Thank you.
Including dental care, comprehensive mental health services, chemical dependency treatment, vision care, language interpreter services, emergency transportation, prescription drugs. And, Madam Chair, the reason for that is there are a couple of these in particular that are sore points, the dental care being one of them, and I do think that as they design a benefit set that is going to be involved in the plans that get some of the benefits, that they ought to include basic services like dental care. Senator Berglund.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I don't envision that any of these would be left out. I think the issue is when they would be provided and to what extent they would be provided. So there would be an array of prescription drugs that would be available as a part of a benefit set, but the question is, do you need a prescription drug or not based on your condition? And if there are a number of prescription drugs that might perform the same function, would you have all of them available to you, or would you only have some of them available to you? And I think that's the work that this benefit set committee is going to be doing.
And Madam Chair, Senator Berglund,
Senator Marty, you
assume that every one of these providers will include dental care. You're just saying they may have higher deductibles or copays or whatever.
I think that dental care will be, I mean, there is no way you could imagine a situation where somebody would say dental care is not needed for a person's total health.
So, and Madam Chair, Senator Berglund.
Senator Marty.
The prescription drugs, again, yeah, this is not saying you have to cover every prescription drug. It's the same as what my health plan covers, prescription drugs. I have a $15 a month copayment for whatever the drug is. And I'm sure they don't cover every drug. I've never had a problem with that. But so each of these items you think are going to be included in their benefit set?
I do.
Then are you objecting to this amendment or not? Or, I mean, I think it should be a friendly amendment then, because I just want to make sure they're all covered.
Senator Berglund, before you respond, I think there are three questions we have here. So Senator Higgins, Senator Worgen, and Senator Lynch have questions. Senator Higgins.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And it looks to me like all this is doing is directing the commission that will put together the benefit set. So if we want to give them a strong direction, then we should include all of this in the bill.
Right.
Senator
Just
Hagan.
To be clear,
excuse me. Senator
Madam Bergen. Chair and Senator Marty, there would be an evidence-based benefit set that would be available in the market. It does not mean everybody would have to buy that benefit set. We would be looking at the benefit set in order to try to help people understand how there could be a benefit set structured that would be different than the way we do it today in regard to, you know, let's just take one of these things, prescription drugs. Maybe a plan covers every prescription drug that there is, whether it's generic or not. But there's a $500 deductible before they pay anything for any drug. The idea of this is to look at a different way of doing it where you might have a large deductible on some drug, but on another drug, maybe insulin, you would have no deductible. So that's the kind of thing that we're trying to get at with this, if you can understand that, so that it's a little bit different than how it's been looked at in the past, to make sure that when something is very essential to maintaining health, that we make sure that we would have a plan out there where it would be covered at low or no cost to the patient in terms of co-payments.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Berglund, you just tapped into where the question I was going to ask. By putting this in the bill, Senator Marty, don't we then say that every package has to include this, and we preclude any package from having different services that people don't necessarily want to have?
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Wergen, no. It would not require that every package that would be offered in every insurance policy have this benefit set in it. You could have other things out there. But we wanted to make sure that we did have some choices for people that did have more of an evidence-based benefit set.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wergen.
Senator Berglund, I'm saying, maybe I'm not being very clear. I'm saying the way you have it written allows for flexibility, but the amendment takes the flexibility out of it, out of the ability to create benefit sets, and says here's what all of the benefit sets will have. So doesn't this take flexibility?
I don't read it that way myself.
Oh, okay.
You know, I can't imagine that vision care wouldn't be in an essential benefit set. Now, does that mean everybody's going to get laser surgery as a part of the benefit set? I don't think so, because there is another alternative way to treat that need for vision care that would not be as expensive and would be equally as effective.
So Mr.
Chair. Senator Wergen.
So, Senator Berglund, you see this amendment as okay because it doesn't change the structure of what you're doing?
I mean, I am sure that every one of these things would be considered, and, you know, if, you know, I mean, there's no way you could say that somebody that can't see 2 feet in front of their face doesn't need to have a vision care benefit. So, you know, I don't think it really does much of anything. But if it makes somebody else feel better, I don't care if you put it on the bill.
So, Senator
right.
Lynch, you have a comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
It seems like if there is not a problem, we should just move the amendment. But go ahead, Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I just want to comment because my work group spent a lot of time in this area. And I think there's some confusion in the room on what the benefit set, what that means. And in one school of thought, the benefit set is meant to mean these are the benefits, these are the rights, these are the things that I'm going to have access to. Another school of thought is the benefit set is in the area of oral health, take for example. There might be cleaning of teeth, there might be pulling of teeth, there might be bleaching of teeth. In the benefit set, as applies here, it might include cleaning and polishing, it might include the pulling, but the whitening it might not include in the benefit set. So I think we're talking in kind of two different planes on what the benefit really means.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I think Senator Berglund is right. I think that this is stuff that should be included when we measure what evidence-based healthcare includes. And I think, I mean, I think and I'm hoping that this is what would be covered anyway, and just wanted to make sure that that's what's figured in that. So I'd like to.
It seems like the author does not have a problem with it, so why don't we move it? Go ahead, Senator Martin. Move your amendment and let's vote on it.
A12.
Any comments? All of those in favor signifying by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Amendment is adopted. You had another one? Senator Marty, you had another
one? Madam Chair, I only had one other amendment, which is it's a bigger chunk of this. And I have, as I said Wednesday, I think there's a lot of good things in this bill that I strongly support. In terms of the healthcare homes, in terms of prevention, in terms of expanding access, and I realize we're not going to expand access much here, but some. But in terms of, and I think some of the things, I'm not convinced the health insurance exchange will, I think it'll provide easier access to people in picking insurance, so I'm not proposing to touch that or anything. But I have real concern. We're taking as a start, and I realize as you invest in things that you think are going to save money, but you're investing $20 million in health transformation organization, and I am not convinced that this is going to – it's going to be a lot more complex. I think the way you've described the health plans, they will be setting premiums and co-pays, but they can't negotiate prices or anything. They're all fixed. And so this would delete a number of the sections related to the pricing. It would keep in the care cost, the care coordination provision, which I think is your tier two. It would keep in the electronic medical records, prescription drug program. It would keep in the 125 plans, the affordability. It would take out, however, it would be taking out the Transformation Commission, and it would be taking out Tier 3 provision and a lot of other things that go along with it. But it's keeping in place the health exchange, even though I'm not convinced that that's a good way to deliver health care. But it's easier for what we've got now than we've got. So that's what the amendment does.
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
And Senator Murray, I would oppose this amendment. A lot of the savings that we believe we will generate in the system are as a result of the Level 3 payment reform. I think Level 3 payment reform is very important. I don't think just paying an average of a $50 management fee to providers for a medical home is really going to get us where we need to be in terms of managing all of the chronic diseases that we have out there that could be managed better. Certainly an average $50 management fee is not going to cover a daily phone consult with a nurse practitioner if you have cardiac disease. And I think that the Healthcare Transformation Commission is very important. It's one of the ways the legislature has input into the continuing development of the payment reform. Nothing against the Commissioner of Health. I think they do a great job, and I think she's a wonderful person. But I think at this stage, there's enough about the implementation that should have both the administration and the legislature involved in it.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I your comments made me remember one more provision in here. The amendment to page 52 would remove the average of $50 per person per month fee. I mean, it would cap, so it would be the care coordination fee would vary by thresholds of care, but it would not be capped at, I don't know how you cap an average when you don't know what your pool is going to be, but aside from that, I think you're right. $50 per person isn't going to fundamentally change how we coordinate care and how we deliver care. But I hear your comments. I just think we've got a very, very, very complex healthcare system now. We're not eliminating any part. We're not even eliminating the health plans, which it sounds to me from your descriptions today and the other night that we've eliminated 99% of their function. And we're keeping them in place, and we're putting new minimum $20 million bureaucracy on top of it. I'm told that some people, I've suggested that I think a lot of these doctors, any doctor's office that wants to be involved in this bidding would be likely to hire consultants, and when you had Ms. Robineau, and that we'd have a whole new industry of consultants. I'm told the health department actually calls them, they have a new word for what they think this new profession would be, aggregators, I think it was, to define that new position. I think, I mean, my fear with this is that it's going to take 3, 4, 5 years to put into place, and we're going to need 3, 4, 5 years to figure it out, and I think you would admit that even if this works exactly the way you think it's going to, and even if it saved enough money to make up for the new administrative costs, that at that point we're still not going to have anywhere close to, well, we're going to have 97% insured. We're still not going to have chunk of the population insured, and I'm still concerned that even with that language on we just adopted that a lot of people who have insurance like now won't have access to affordable dental care, won't have access to affordable medical equipment supplies, that they're still going to have the people who have insurance but find out something wasn't covered, and they're going to have $30,000 surgical bills that aren't covered. I guess I'm concerned that we create this whole entity and 7, 8 years down the line we've got a more bureaucratic system that might have saved some money. You're saying it'll save a lot of money, but we still won't have addressed, we won't have provided care to everyone. We'll have a more complex, we're spending 30 some cents on the dollar now for administrative costs. It'll be higher. But that's my concern. I wanted to offer it. I realize I don't have the votes on it, but I wanted to point that out because I think even if everything in this bill passed exactly the way you wanted, I don't think it gets us there. And the example the other night when the health department, when we discussed their analysis of the prevention savings, where we're talking not 3-to-1 savings, but 3,200-some% savings on those investments in health care. I think those numbers are just way off the charts from reality, and I'm afraid the same is true of this very complicated scheme that I would care to bet that most of us who have been listening to it for a long time would have trouble explaining to somebody. And nothing wrong with complexity, but it doesn't. It makes it very hard to make some of this happen. So.
Senator Berglund, and then Senator Corrine has a question.
Madam Chair and members, you know, this bill will move us forward. This bill will move us a long way forward. This amendment does not help this bill move us forward. You know, taking Level 3 payment reform out is a big mistake. Taking the Healthcare Transformation Commission out is a big mistake. And we have to have some parameters on what we're going to pay in terms of management fees, because otherwise we're just adding maybe a big cost onto the system where we're not getting the benefit that we need back out of it. The management fee is not the way to do the total amount of payment reform we need. Level 3 is the way to do the total amount of payment reform we need. So I would urge people to vote against this amendment. And Senator Marty, if you don't think this bill moves us forward enough, then you can choose to vote against the bill. I believe that it moves us forward enough so that we should vote for the bill. And if it's not moving us as far as we should go, then the next time we get a chance, we should move ourselves further forward.
Senator Corrine.
Well, I don't know that I need to prolong this, but I would just say, Madam Chair, thank you, and members, we all agree on this committee, Republicans and Democrats alike, that we need to do something to fix our broken health care system. We are working together. We're working with the governor's office. The governor has to sign this. And when you have an amendment that is what I think, as Senator Bergen has said this before, a deal breaker, then you're going to derail the whole thing. And all the work that we've done, I know I did a lot of damn work last fall and all winter, and all that work's going to be for nothing if we have amendments that are going to derail this. We need to move this forward, and you know what? If it doesn't work, at least we tried, but at least we're trying to do something. And I would just urge members to vote no on this, and let's vote this out of this committee and move it forward.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My concern is on that level three, and some of the providers that I'm hearing from are saying that they don't know how this is really going to work. Is there going to be a way? Is it simply they don't understand it, or is there going to be more talk about how to develop it? They don't know how they're going to get paid for the services. They think it's just beyond. And so if that'll help me to understand sure. it, if we need that in there, or how I will vote.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Dahl. One of the reasons they don't understand how it's going to work is because they're going to be in the driver's seat. They're really going to decide. You can be in level three, and the minimum things that you would have to do is to disclose a price that would be the same price for everybody. And then be accountable for that price for a year. And every year you can change your price. So if you didn't charge enough the first year, you can charge more the second year. That's all you have to do in level three. Continue being paid on a fee-for-service basis the way you have been. On the other hand, level three offers new opportunities for providers to offer services in a different way and to be paid in a different way so that they can be more creative about providing better care to people who have chronic diseases, and they can help get some of the waste out of the system. And there is waste in the system. I mean, I was talking to Dr. Meeches yesterday, and he said, yes, of course there is. And so right now, the only incentive there is to add waste to the system because you get paid for it. And so the providers that call you will be in the driver's seat. They will get to decide how much of level three they want to do, or they can be participating at the minimum level.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
One follow-up question on that same thing. The issue of risk, that's as they move more into level three and accept more of doing the bidding, are they taking more of that risk on, or how is that factored into this?
Well, they are going to be accountable for their price, but, you know, the insurance companies are still going to pay claims, and they're going to pay people for every single thing they bill for, as long as it's a covered service within the policy. And, you know, if people are not doing as good a job of holding to their price as we want them to, they might be getting paid a little bit less for each service than their bid would have allowed them to. But they'll be getting those on a frequent basis throughout the year so that they can make adjustments to their practice. You know, if they're giving too many MRIs and they figured they wouldn't be, they have an opportunity to look and see if all of them are necessary or if they could be doing x-rays for some of those procedures. So there's an opportunity to make mid-course corrections at the provider level throughout the year. But the other side of the coin is if a provider isn't going to be accountable for their price, then the price transparency doesn't mean anything because you and your constituents as consumers think you're going to be getting this price, and when you show up, you know, if the price is twice that much, you're not going to believe the transparent system is working.
Madam Chair, if I could, one last thing. Senator Berglund, the one thing you mentioned is if they're not holding to the prices that you said we would have to look at that, and who's the we? Who is the entity that will determine whether or not we're holding to our cost containment?
Well, I think what I meant was the healthcare organization themselves would have to look at why they're not. You know, why aren't they able to live with their price? Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, a couple of comments, some in response to Senator Berglund's comments and some not directly related to that, but related to the amendment. First of all, in the removing the $50 average fee cap, I agree with you, just raising a real high management fee isn't going to do it. That's not what I'm suggesting. I do think that, first of all, you can't. If you're taking the most difficult people in first, if you're going to keep your $50 average, you got to, $50 is what you got to pay the first care coordination fees to the most difficult people. I think it might be several times that much as being a reasonable amount, but it was not to have a no-cap thing. It was just that I don't think the $50 is appropriate. In terms of your overall comment about if I don't think the bill is moving far enough forward, but we ought to take a step forward, I've never been one who is opposed to taking small steps. You compromise. If you can't get a full loaf, you might settle for half a loaf. If you could get 9/10 of a loaf, that would be a dumb thing to settle for. And here, if you can move a slice or two forward, great. I say if that's the best you can get. I would say we're at a unique time right now, a great opportunity, because I think the public is finding out left and right. Insurance companies are dropping their health coverage. People are struggling, and I think we've got a unique chance where we could make more significant reform than that. But even so, if this moved it a little bit forward, I would still be saying that. And I think in the public health, you make good steps forward. I think on balance, when you factor in the new administrative steps, and there are lots of new administrative functions, and it will make it more complex, and it will make it more difficult for people to figure out the system, and it will add administrative costs to the system, and it might, and I say might, and maybe there's a good chance it will save some money, will be delivering less medical care, including less wasted medical care, perhaps, which would save some money. But we're also going to be adding, no question about, we're adding administrative costs. So I guess I see it as, I would vote for it if it was even a slice or two of the full loaf. But I'm afraid that the negative things in it make us moving backwards overall, which is the reason I am voting against it. I know you've got the votes, but I just think I have to say that. And in terms of the complexity, because one more comment on that. A couple weeks ago, there was a newspaper story of this new Carol.com website, which is going to help people shop for this. And it kind of bugged me when I found out the CEO of that was on the Transformation Task Force, which is saying more disclosure is good. I don't know, maybe at one of the meetings he said, hey, we're working on this new business and this price disclosure might help us. I think there's a conflict of interest there, and I think that one of the troubles I have with this whole scheme of moving forward is that I think it's going to create a whole new field of consultants. I think it's going to do a lot more businesses trying to do the pricing. I guess I'm afraid that we're moving backwards, and at the end, 5-6 years from now, I hope I'm wrong, but I can see because of other trends that are happening that we're still going to have the same problems where not only is there 3, 4, 5, 6, 8% of the public without health insurance whatsoever, but that another 3-4 times that many have health insurance, but they can't afford to go to the dentist or they can't find a dentist who will take them. They can't get the mental health care they need. They can't pay for the prescription drugs. So I'm not convinced. I would vote for it, despite my concerns about this, if I thought overall it was moving forward.
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
And Senator Marty, well, I will keep trying to convince you, but
please
let
do.
Me just say one thing about administrative costs. Many of the things that we are asking be done collectively as a community in this bill are currently being done individually by, you know, 5 or 6 big companies and dozens of small companies. And to my way of thinking, we make it more efficient when we do it as a community. So when we measure value, when we set standards for outcomes, when we have a mechanism for the public to have transparency on price and quality as a community, we are doing it more efficiently than if we're doing it hundreds of individual organizations. And so, yes, there's an appropriation here for implementation of this, but in terms of your constituents, it is going to be simpler for them. They're going to be able to find out what something costs, which is pretty darn hard to do now because there is no one price for anything. There's dozens and hundreds of prices for the same thing. They are going to be able to find out the quality of the services that are provided because there will be one standard way of having that measured at the state level and it will be transparent to them. And if they can find out that they've been going to an inefficient, high-cost provider who doesn't have very good quality, because they got that information and they make a change to a better provider, they will have done themselves a favor. And the system doesn't really allow that to happen today.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I just want to respond to one comment there, and then I know we can vote on this, but when you're talking about the price disclosure, as I told you, this amendment does not take out the price transparency. The fixed price is where what a provider charges your health plan, they have to charge me as an individual, and everybody's the same. I think there's a lot of benefit to that. This amendment does not take that out, because I strongly agree with you on that. I think when we're trying to do health care by the consumers, picking and choosing by price and quality, we have to remember that a whole lot of the people who are getting health care are people who are in an automobile accident, and they're not going to say which ambulance service they're going to take. They're not saying which hospital, which surgeons, which anything. And even if you are having back surgery or whatever, if you are going to have back surgery, knowing what the package price is pretty hard. And if you go into a hospital with a package price and you find out, because it's good quality and a lower price for back surgery, and you find out you got some heart problems as a result of it, you have complications, it's not the kind of thing you can shop for like a car or a vacuum cleaner. So I agree with you, price disclosure will be helpful, but I don't think it's a panacea.
Madam Chair and Senator Murray, I agree there are some times when emergency services are not something you're going to be shopping for. But there is a general decision that people make about where they're going to try to receive most of their health care. And there are other decisions that people make when something comes up that is going to be a scheduled procedure. And this system will make it a lot easier for people to make better decisions.
I think we need to take a vote on the amendment. So any further discussion on Amendment 813? If not, all of those in favor signifying by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
No.
Amendment does not.
Madam Chair.
Is not adopted.
No.
Madam Chair, I would like to make my motion again that we move this bill on to the appropriate committee.
Any Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just was going to respond to the fact that, you know, I know it's a long, drawn-out conversation for some people. There's some people in the room who have already decided how they're going to vote. And, you know, and some, perhaps even some members have been told how they need to vote on this. But I'll probably wind up supporting this bill in the end, but it's really important for me to understand what it is that I'm voting for. And frankly, Senator Fischbach, if there's some hoity-toity official in the building, I don't think that should impact wrapping up or pushing our discussion really quickly, you know, and shutting down the opportunity for us to have conversations on pieces. This is a
Madam Chair.
Very, very important, huge health care reform piece, and I want to make sure that I understand it. It's been really helpful, the conversation we've had even here today, in continuing to understand what's going on. I haven't been on every single one of the health care committees that worked over the interim. Even Senator Lynch's clarification just a few minutes earlier about a conversation about a standard benefit set versus maybe a choice of menued options that you buy in the baskets. I mean, that's a clarifying piece. Every time we go through a little bit of discussion, it's helpful to me. And perhaps everyone has a much better understanding of this enormous bill than I do, but I appreciate the chance to have a discussion.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair and Senator Erickson Ropes, we've had hours. I mean, when did we start this? Wednesday?
Wednesday.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if you used the time between Wednesday and today to try to get some of your questions answered, because I feel like we've been through this. I have a pretty good understanding of it. I took the time to read it and reread it a couple of times to ask the questions that I needed to. I just feel like, and you know what? Congressman Oberstar's from your party, so if I don't see him, I'm not as upset as. But I guess I did have other commitments. Is what the point is? Is that, you know, transportation was meeting. There are other things going on. You know, there are things going on back in our districts too. That this was not a committee meeting that we had made plans for. This bill will go through at least six other committees.
Thank you, Senator Cory.
There's a great opportunity for us to, you know, take a look at this again and again and again. It's by no means the end of the process here. We are not passing this thing to the floor. We will have ample opportunity if we haven't already. And I would like to renew my motion again, because I made the motion. It hadn't been voted on the first time. This time I'd actually like to have a vote on it and have the fact that I made a motion recognized.
Thank you, Senator Fischbach. Let's ask the members if we should continue to have this conversation and continue to have questions. We need to act on that motion. Yeah. So, Senator Coring, on the motion.
That doesn't cut off discussion, so you can recognize me. I would just say, I would just say that, and this isn't directed at any member, but I would just remind members that the Senate rules forbids any other member to call in question another member's motives for the way they're going to vote. And to say that somebody, another member, has been told how to vote, in my mind, calls into question. So I would just remind members that we need to be respectful of each other and not question how somebody's going to vote. I believe I'm correct on that.
All right. Thank you, Senator Coring. I'm going to ask members to address the motion and make a decision about Senator
Motion
Berger.
Should be that the bill, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce.
So moved. Again.
Any further discussion? All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much, members. If you do have other questions and you want to come and talk to me about them, I'm more than happy to talk to anybody.
I want to thank the committee for being patient for 2 days of this, because I think it was a good discussion and helpful. And I know a lot of you, especially the rural members, it was a burden to stay around today. But I appreciate the discussion. And with that, we are adjourned until Monday noon.
He's a good actor. We are such a large, geographically large.
Monday, 12:30, whenever it is.
And I suppose in a different decade.
You would say an extra half hour.
Probably wasn't as big.
Well, you're going to figure. Okay, when are you going to get county-based purchasing?
Is she carrying your bill?
Now?
I'm trying to figure out, I can't remember why we did that in the first place.
Yeah, I can't.
Is it time now?
Couple, not a couple. Time now? Who's coming in?